Well, the North American International Auto Show is our really big show here in Detroit every year. And today, by the way, is the official opening for the public. Of course, it's been in the headlines all week long with the, for instance, North American Car and Truck of the Year and a lot of the vehicle launches during press week. Big time. And Gary, I know that you have been to the other event, which is that wonderful gala.
That's right, the charity preview. Didn't go this year, unfortunately, but they raise a lot of money for charities.
$5.3 million.
Yeah, can you believe it? Over $100 million since they started. But wow. I think the first one was like, don't quote me, 70-something.
Yeah, because it's they're the 27th year, I think.
Oh, maybe it's then 80-something.
Anyway,
it's been going on for a long time.
It is indeed remarkable. Well, somebody who follows that car industry very carefully is a man named Paul Eisenstein. And Paul is the editor of the Detroit Bureau, and we're delighted to have him with us again. Paul, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Good to be with you.
Thank you so much.
Well, Paul, I just kind of on a broader scale, how does this year's North American International Auto Show match up, do you think, to past years?
Well, if you're going by the raw vehicle count, how many cars actually were introduced here, It's probably one of the lesser shows. It's overwhelming from that perspective, but in terms of trends and important things to see, I think it's still a very, very, very good show.
Paul, you know, they've expanded Cobo Hall, and it's now really nice, but they don't have enough room for the cars because of all the technology companies that are here, right?
that's part of the issue. In a sense, I almost look at the Detroit Auto Show this year as an extension of the Consumer Electronics Show.
That's true.
Which is where they had all the big technology previews, including the first showing of the Chevrolet Bolt with a B.
That's right, yeah.
And a couple of great concepts, including two electric vehicles from Volkswagen. But here's something that I find very interesting, which shows you how much the world is changing. On Tuesday, the last of the big brand intros was held by Toyota. And, you know, what would you expect? You'd expect a hot new minivan or SUV or maybe a new version of the Camry, right? You want to guess what their news conference was?
No. Yeah, I don't know what it is. What is it?
It was to announce a $5 million exclusive deal with a company out of Seattle called Kymeta, which is developing a super high-speed, very small, very flat satellite antenna.
I thought you were going to say hoverboard.
No. The Toyota hoverboard, actually, they did that, but that's another story. This tells you where the world is going. They're doing a deal with this startup company, which is using a military technology that's now available for other uses. And the idea is to develop something. It's about the size of the high plate that you would get when you go to somebody's party, right?
And they put it on the roof?
You can mount it in the roof, and there's some talk about it if you were to use plastic or carbon fiber. You could make it in between the layers of the roof.
Ooh.
And instead of being able to download kilobytes or maybe megabytes, certainly not gigabytes with the technology we have, imagine being able to download terabytes.
Oh my gosh.
And the idea is that you need this sort of breakthrough to be able to handle all the things you're going to be doing in the car, such as downloading updates to your infotainment system, to the engine control system, the suspension system, and, of course, mapping and other things needed when you go autonomous.
Right. But, Paul, you're raising an interesting point there because wasn't it Tesla that just recently released one of those massive downloads for one?
Yes, they did, but they've since updated the release. They released something called Autopilot, which is the farthest anybody has gone towards autonomous vehicles. In fact, probably too far. They had to issue an update to roll back some of the capabilities.
That's right.
People were actually abusing the technology, and in some cases, they were really close to having some serious accidents.
Well, they were going to sleep. Yeah.
Well, not paying any attention. And they're on YouTube. They were posting videos of themselves in the back seat.
Yeah, I know.
It was crazy. Just very, very dangerous. And I can see why they rolled it back.
Right now it is. The technology wasn't designed to do what they were doing. These people were basically saying, let's see how far we can take it.
But it was working.
It was. Now, they almost had a couple of problems. There was, for example, one instance where the system tried to follow the line, and it meant it was going along, I believe, at 70 miles an hour, and suddenly it tried to go on to the exit ramp or on ramp onto a freeway at a high speed rather than following the road. So they had to change that a little bit. Yeah. I mean, this is the problem. I have been doing a lot of research about autonomous technology. I drove for 45 minutes in an autonomous vehicle in Tokyo traffic before the Tokyo Motor Show. And there's a lot of very cool stuff, very extensive capabilities being added. But the problem is that they're, every time they develop something and they think they've got it nailed, they discover one more little detail that has to be dealt with. For example, when I was driving through traffic, a cop walked out at an intersection to hold up traffic to let some construction gear out, and we were just entering the intersection, so we didn't have to stop. But I asked Ijima-san, the guy who was running the Nissan program, it was a Nissan vehicle I'm driving, what would have happened? And he said, well, we would have seen him, if it was a second or two earlier, as an obstacle and stopped. However, they have a new system, the updated technology they're launching, which would have gone around him, avoided him, just like they might have avoided, you know, a car racing through an intersection. And so now here's an interesting point. How do you program your car not just to avoid an obstacle, but to recognize that's not just a pedestrian walking across the street, but a cop holding his hand up to stop traffic for all lanes.
A very special pedestrian.
Right.
Could give you a ticket if you didn't do it.
though I will tell you this. A colleague, friend of mine, you may have read her stuff, Joanne Muller from Forbes, has a story that she just did. And I don't like to plug too many money competitors, as it were. But Joanne has a wonderful piece on Forbes. I think the title is An Autonomous Vehicle Saved My Life. She was testing one at CES. I believe it was a Delphi vehicle. And it was turning into an intersection when a couple of cars ran a stoplight at high speed.
Ooh.
And, you know, she's an experienced auto rider. She knows what cars can do. And she said the vehicle slammed its brakes, even though it was already engaged in the corner. A human driver would have been looking the wrong way.
Right.
And wouldn't have been able to stop in time. And this thing actually was able to avoid a certain collision with a couple of red light runners.
Wow. We're talking, by the way, with Paul Eisenstein, who is the editor of the Detroit Bureau, one of the authoritative spots to go to find out what's going on in the auto industry.
So, Paul, you know, there was one instance that I know of where the police pulled over a Google car and couldn't figure out who to give the ticket to because there was no driver.
Well, this is even more funny because the reason it was pulled over, and he never really was going to give him a ticket.
Right.
They were going too slow.
Yeah, they were only programmed to go 25 miles an hour, and this was a 35-mile-an-hour zone, right?
Right. Yeah. It was one of those little Google mobiles, looked like they came out of the movie Sleeper, you know, the old Woody Allen movie.
Yes.
And so, yeah, they pulled it over because it was, sorry about that. I didn't realize I had my speakers on. Anyway, they pulled it over to advise the driver that he was going too slow and then realized there was no driver on board. I have a photo up on the site. It's just great to see. And the that's one of the issues that Google is dealing with.
Now, Paul, before we get to we could probably spend the whole program talking about the autonomous vehicles. Just before we wrap this up, and we're going to be taking a break in just a moment, my understanding is that what's happening more and more is we're not talking about our cars driving for us, but only in certain areas rather than all over the place. They would like, for instance, the heavy urban areas.
Uh-huh.
Autonomous vehicles could be really, really effective. Paul Eisenstein, the editor of the Detroit Bureau, is our guest. We're going to return, and when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the car and truck of the year and see if I can straighten something out about the provenance of one of those vehicles. That's all coming up next on the Internet Advisor. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell in studio here. And with us on our line from the North American International Auto Show is Paul Eisenstein, who is the editor of thedetroitbureau.com, a great source for analysis of what's going on in the car industry all year long, if you're interested in that kind of thing. Paul, thank you again so much for being here with us. Well, see if you can help us with something. As Ed and I were driving over in the car, I was remembering that the two vehicles for the North American Car and Truck of the Year, the NACTOY, were the Honda Civic for the car, right?
Honda Civic for the car.
And then the truck was actually an SUV. It was the Volvo
XC90, and we actually changed it this year to formally recognize that it's the truck and utility vehicle award.
Ah.
Though, you know, we simplify it by still saying NACTOY, car and truck. It just reflects a reality. There are fewer and fewer trucks, if you will.
That's true.
Classic trucks based on truck-like or body-on-frame platforms.
Right. Well, now here's the question we had, and see if you can straighten this out. I thought I had heard that Volvo had been purchased by a Chinese company.
In fact, they were. And in fact, while there's been a lot of attention paid to General Motors bringing over a Chinese-made vehicle, the Buick Envision, a small crossover utility, the very, very, very first passenger car brought over to the United States from China was a Volvo, a stretched version of the S60 sedan called the Insignia. Very, very small numbers. And by the way, now we're going to see a third vehicle, or second from GM. They're going to bring the plug-in hybrid vehicle version of their new CT6 Cadillac.
Oh, the Cadillac, right.
Because the plug-in is primarily aimed for China, where, as you know, their pollution problems are so bad, the government has been pressing very hard for the industry to start using alternate powertrains, primarily battery.
They expect
the vast majority of those vehicles to be sold in China, and they'll bring a few hundred, they say. They're expecting to bring at most a few hundred of them over a month.
So we finally have a market force for adopting electric vehicles. And that is China, where the whole consumption in China has had a tremendous impact on manufacturing in the U.S. and also all across the board.
Well, first of all, China is now the world's largest automotive market.
Yep.
It's very, very close to becoming the world's largest luxury automotive market.
Oh, really?
And I believe last year, the numbers I saw were preliminary, but last year they were supposed to close the books on 2015 with China being the world's largest market for battery-based vehicles, which range from, I think in that, by the way, they're not talking about hybrids. They're talking about primarily plug-based vehicles, such as plug-in hybrids and pure battery electric.
This is fascinating. No, here's the final question that Ed and I were asking. Does this mean that this is the first Chinese vehicle to be named truck or utility vehicle of the year?
Well, it's a Chinese-owned company, but it's still a Swedish company.
Okay.
The car is being made in Sweden. So, it's like Jaguar is getting a lot of great press, and you can call it an Indian company. It's owned by Tata Motors out of India, but it's still a very British company, and this is still a very Swedish company. All the executives who run it are there, and I've talked with them a lot, and they really do have pretty much a sense of independence. If anything, the Chinese are saying, teach us how to build better cars.
I got you. All right. Paul, I want to move on to something, because we've talked about the connection, and you initially did, between the Consumer Electronics Show and the Detroit Auto Show going on right now. Talk a little bit about this, what we're seeing more and more of, which is the cross-pollination, if you will, between the auto industry and the Internet of Things.
Yeah, that's an interesting area. Okay, first of all, you have more microprocessors in the typical car than you have in the typical home right now. That's going to change in the years ahead because, now I'm drawing a blank on the big consulting firm. They issued a report out of CES just a week ago that said they expect to have, that the average home will have about 500 connected devices, Internet of Things devices, within the next decade.
Wow.
I mean, everything from your coffee pot to your washing machine to your, of course, your light switches and plugs and the like.
Mm-hmm.
And the automobile, interestingly enough, is going to be one of the ways that you access the Internet of Things and, in particular, the stuff at your house. One of the more interesting things that I've just seen was the announcement that Ford is pairing with Amazon so that Alexa, who is just woken up in my office, Alexa, can you say hello? Nope, she won't say hello. She's being shy. But she would, if I asked her, she would say, Alexa, what's the weather? And she'll tell you that. But you will be able to use Alexa, for example, to call your house and open up, say, your Chamberlain garage opener as you get close. You'll be able to use voice to turn temperature, you know,
sure.
turn the thermostat up or so on.
Or open the garage door. By the way, we should mention to folks, Alexa is the, like, Siri and Microsoft's
Cortana, but it
Cortana,
operates out
right.
of a variety of different technologies.
Right, and this is Amazon's technology for voice activation. It's called Alexa. And we probably have woken up a whole bunch of them around.
Yeah, you know, every time I say Alexa, she wakes up and the blue ring goes on. I have four of them at my home and cottage. Plus, I have a couple Fire TVs, and that's not meant to be a plug. I just happen to have a lot of it. But the idea, I can right now, for example, turn up or down my lights and do things like that. Mm-hmm. And going forward, you're going to see even more than that, and you'll be able to do it from the car. One of the things I really got a kick out of was the Volkswagen announcement at the show. They showed off two electric vehicles, heavy emphasis on connected technology. There was the Golf Touch, e-Golf Touch, so it's a battery electric vehicle with all sorts of gesture controls and ability to plug into the Internet of Things. They also showed off the Buddy, capital B-U-D-D-E, the Buddy, which is sort of a modern take of the 60s era microbus that everybody loves. And now, will they build it? Maybe, maybe not. But they did say a lot of the technology in it will be in production. And I love this. So it was very similar. You'll be able to operate all sorts of connected technology. They said, you know, your garage door, your thermostat,
and
your lights. But in typical German fashion, what they seemed to really be emphasizing was another thing. As you know, a lot of people are talking about refrigerators that will know what's in them, right? And
right.
be able to alert you. Well, I loved it because one of the things that clearly mattered to them was the ability to have the refrigerator call you up in your car and say, bring home more beer.
Bring home the bacon.
And
the beer.
Good German company. I love that. What kind, Paul, as you've looked at the vehicles that are on display there, what one would you like to drive off the lot?
Oh, you're talking at the show now. Are we talking high-tech or just one that I would love to drive?
One that you'd love to drive.
All right. Purely new vehicles, there are two that I would really like to see. One going in production and one I am screaming at their executives to get put in production. The latter is the Avista. That is the concept coupe from Buick. Absolutely stunning.
Yes.
It's the second year in a row that Buick has won the design award from Eyes on Design and will probably win a lot of other design awards for this, you know, for having just a gorgeous concept. And we're hoping that we'll see some of those actually make it into production. The other one which surprised me, because I'm not typically a fan, was the new Lexus LC500. It's the production version coming up next year of the LFLC, a vehicle most people did not expect them to build. And in fact, Toyota's CEO told us he really didn't think that they were going to build it either. It was going to be just a show car. But I think they got tired of us all the time saying that Lexus was such a boring car.
Mm.
And I loved it. Akio Toyota, grandson of the founder of Toyota, said, we hope this will be the last time that we'll be hearing people use the words boring and Lexus in the same sentence.
What's unique about the Lexus LC500?
Just beautiful.
That's a
gorgeous
beautiful
car. The base model will have only 467 horsepower.
Only.
Only. They are working on an LCF, which I expect to be, and the plan is to be over 600. There's going to be a convertible. We broke that exclusively on the DetroitBureau.com. There is an LC convertible coming about a year later.
Wow.
And this shows you where the market is going. This is a very important one. There's also a hybrid in development, but it won't be the typical dog slow Lexus hybrid, you know, all about mileage and driver excitement be damned. That one is supposedly going to be a performance, you know, much more performance oriented. Mm. Now, you caught the announcements about the Bolt, right?
Right, exactly, right.
Okay, here is a compact crossover, battery powered, 0 to 60 in 7 seconds.
I know.
And remember, you have the Tesla Model S with the ludicrous mode that'll hit 60 in 2.9 seconds.
Paul, at that speed, we've got to cut this off because we're at the end. As always, there's much more to talk with you about. Paul Eisenstein, the editor at thedetroitbureau.com. Check it out for more information on The Car Show. Paul, again, thanks for being with us again this year.
My pleasure.
Take care of yourself.